This is the Painless Health Podcast. This is your host, Dr. Avi. Living painlessly and in good health is our goal. We are here to help you get there. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Now let's have some fun and let's get painless. Hi, everyone. This is your host, Dr. Avinash Ramchandani on the Painless Health Podcast. Today, we have a very, very special guest. His name is Jake Steiner. He is currently in Bangkok, Thailand, and he is of endmyopia.org. His goal is to decrease people's diopter on their vision. He actually eliminated his from a minus 5 to a 0 about 20 years ago. He's helped 1.2 million people reduce their dependence on corrective lenses. Now, his approach is not scientific in one way and very scientific in the other, because he is not an ophthalmologist or an optometrist, but he is actually just someone that does research on scholar.google.com, and he has a method of doing it. And he's going to tell you all about that today. And if you want any more information about the way he does it in more detail, you want to join the crew, you want to follow his Facebook, I welcome you. He has a website again, endmyopia, endmyopia.org. Thank you again, Jake Steiner, for joining the podcast today. And
thanks for having me, Avi.
Absolutely, Jake. Why don't we have you introduce yourself first and just tell us a little bit about what your mission is and why you're talking to us today.
So I am a proponent of happy eyeballs. I'm not an optometrist. I'm not a doctor. I'm not in any way technically qualified to do this. I'm a retired investor and stock trader. I started on my own eyesight journey about 20 years ago. I had minus 5 diopter, really high myopia. I was very nearsighted or short-sighted, depending on where you're at. And I was told it was genetic, and it was a big journey in figuring out that it's not genetic, it's not an illness. It's entirely reversible, and I did that for myself. And then friends got interested, and it slowly grew into what's today a pretty large global community of people who improved eyesight. It's amazing how little people care about that stuff in general.
Yeah.
People do care, but in general, there's not much curiosity. You know, it's not like addiction.
Your last right.
Interesting episode. Like, everybody cares.
Right? Yeah. I mean, my last episode was all about, you know, addiction, substance abuse and things like that. And I feel like people really do care about addiction and that stuff. But, you know, this is such a topic that we really don't cover enough, and it affects so many of us. I mean, my wife had LASIK at some point, and I wear glasses or contacts. Otherwise I can't see anything. So it's just such a big topic that we don't cover enough. And my aunt's an ophthalmologist, you know, I'm a physician, but I don't have no idea about how to fix your eyeballs.
Yeah. So. And it's really amazing. I find myself in this weird twilight zone sometimes that this is not a subject, right?
Right.
Like, me of all people, it's turned into like our community is huge, and I'm like, how is this possible, right? Like, I keep, for years and years, I kept waiting for somebody else, somebody serious, like somebody in the industry to go, okay, fine, we'll talk about it. But,
right. Yeah. So how have you found people get better with their eyeballs? And I know I read your blog, it talks about retinal detachment and all this other stuff about how having glasses are having a negative biopter or diopter on your vision can cause problems with your eyeballs. Tell me more about your what you want to do with people and how you can help them.
So first, the first thing I always recommend, and I do myself, is when you find a crazy person on the internet who claims they found a mysterious fix for a thing that you never heard of anywhere else. Red flag, obviously. Scholar.google.com is my favorite destination. For people not familiar with it, only clinical research and studies search engine part of Google. So if you want to avoid all the general riffraff and only get the science riffraff, scholar.google.com. And I always say, start with a cause, right? Like people that are offering you some kind of fix or treatment or solution, they should be able to explain what they're fixing, right? Like what went wrong in the first place? Because people always ask me, eye exercises, does this work? Does that work? I'm like, well, do we know what's wrong in the first place?
Right.
And so you go to scholar.google.com and type in pseudomyopia. And I recommend people do this even if you don't read any studies, just the exercise of seeing what's there. You're going to get tens of thousands of search results. Pseudomyopia, if you're into clinical terms.
P-S-E-U-D, right?
Yeah, P-S-E-U-D. And then M-Y-O-P-I-A. Yeah. Or near-induced transient myopia is also a good one. Near-induced, meaning near, caused by near focus. Induced transient, it's temporary. Myopia also going to give you tens of thousands of search results of just studies showing that nearsightedness, myopia, is caused initially by a muscle spasm. There's a circular muscle in your eye called the ciliary muscle that focuses a flexible lens in the front of your eye. And that lens, of course, focuses light in the back of your eye on the retina. And that muscle continually adjusts for the focal plane that you're looking at. The closer you look at something, the tighter that muscle gets. And it's not really intended to be in close-up mode for hours and hours and hours every day all the time. And what pseudomyopia is, in short, is a muscle spasm. So that ciliary muscle, from being in this close-up mode, gets stuck, doesn't release fully, and now you didn't just suddenly get an illness. It's your eyes are simply stuck in close-up mode. If you took a camera and set it to manual focus and you just left it focused to something up close, distant stuff will be blurry. That's where your short-sightedness, nearsightedness started.
Wow. And that's the basis behind trying to get people's eyes fixed.
That's the first half. So it started as a muscle spasm. When you first went to the optometrist, if they would have said, hey, get away from the books, because I'm assuming we're still in book age when you started with the classes. More distance time, more play. When things are feeling a little bit blurry, you need a break from the book. You need to hold the book further away from your face. They could have given you instructive help instead of glasses. Muscle spasm. Muscle spasm would have gone away. You and I today would be talking to you without glasses. The second half of the story is the minus lenses, the glasses that you're wearing, are quote unquote fixing the muscle spasm. They're not, but they're compensating for the muscle spasm by moving the light further back in your eye.
Right.
Muscle being stuck means light focuses in front of the retina. The minus lens moves the light back, ignoring the muscle spasm. Side effect, though, is your eyeball is a fluid-filled ball of that is not ever perfect, right? Like all biology, it's always slightly adjusting. It has a built-in mechanism to adjust its length, axial length, if you want to look that up on Google right. Scholar, always adjusting. It's always, and there's a fairly complex biological mechanism that checks where the light hits on the retina. And if the light focuses in front of the retina consistently, the eyeball shortens. If light hits behind the retina, the eyeball elongates. And what happens when you're wearing those glasses, especially when you're looking at stuff up close, something called hyperopic defocus happens, where the light hits slightly behind the retina, some of it, causes your eyeball to elongate, called axial elongation. And that's the second part of your myopia. You're probably not wearing the first glasses you ever got. Your eyeball adjusted for the minus lens wear and elongated. Right. Mm-hmm. So now you have a combination of you have some muscle spasm because you spend too much time looking at stuff up close, and you have an elongated eyeball because you're wearing multiple diopters of minus lenses. So the short version of the long story of understanding what happened. So whenever people make claims about how to fix your eyesight, the question is always, okay, this is pretty well known in science. Does this treatment affect the axial length potentially, and does it affect the muscle spasm?
Okay.
Am I going too far back in time with this one?
No, you aren't. You're doing great. So essentially, just to rephrase, when you initially have problems with your eyes, when you're nearsighted initially, it's actually a muscle spasm in your eyeball that's causing the light to hit at the wrong spot in your eye. Then you get something to correct it, and it still hits at the wrong spot, but now on the other side. And then you keep getting bigger and bigger lenses until forever, I guess, in one way.
Until there's a point for most people where your habits and the biology reaches a point where you don't get stronger glasses, depending slightly on various other factors. A lot of Asian populations end up with a lot stronger glasses, which can be in part environmental, part genetics. But it tends to go on for a little while to where you need the glasses to see. So the simple fix is, and why this is not a very profitable enterprise for anybody, is weaker glasses. Slightly weaker glasses. You don't want to throw away your glasses. You don't want to make drastic reductions. Just a little bit weaker, so that instead of seeing 20/15 on eye chart, you might see 20/30, and you challenge your eyes a tiny little bit. And now some of the light will focus slightly in front of the retina, causing axial reduction. So goes the theory, right? Like this is a debate still. Unlike the cause, this is very much some dude came up with this idea 20 years ago and appears to be working, but we don't have the means or the focus for proper clinical studies. We have we have tens of thousands of people who've done this successfully, but we don't have credible evidence. And I like to say this because I want people to be skeptical and careful. But what we've found in practice is you wear slightly weaker glasses, especially for your computer use.
Mm-hmm.
Using your distance glasses for computers, lots more muscle spasm. And since you talk about pain a lot, all kinds of discomfort also involves the eyes. People having headaches, people having dry eyes. I'm not saying neck pain is in any way exclusive to eyes, but it certainly doesn't help when you're wearing glasses. Your posture tends to get weird. You tend to lean forward. You walk strange. You don't have peripheral vision. You don't have peripheral vision with glasses. So when you walk, you have to look at the ground. Whereas a person without lenses, they have a different posture because they look straight more than they look down. So your posture and your interaction with the environment are very much affected by lens wear. So it radiates out into all of the rest of your life being stuck with glasses. And it's a relatively easy fix because you can reduce your diopter dependence by about a diopter a year. So depending how many you have, it's a few years from now, you'll be done with those things.
So you could go from a -5 to a 0 in 5 years.
Or 6-ish. The last diopter might take a little bit. Yeah. And autopilot, there's no exercises. It's just learn how to adjust the habits, right? Learn the basics. You're going to spend a month-ish, not full time, just a half hour here, half hour there, figuring out the details. But once you did, especially after the first reduction, the rest is all every 3 or 4 months, you're reducing your glasses a tiny bit.
Wow, that's fantastic. And how would you propose, say you wanted to drive while you had a change in your lenses or glasses or however it is, would you wear different glasses while you're driving, or would you still keep the other ones on?
Do you have to stop driving?
Well, a lot of us still have to work and go to work. Maybe we should ride a bike when we go to work or something.
We just have to wait for Elon to come out with the self-driving thing. Yeah. No. So a couple of things there. One, always wear whatever is safe for things like driving. Don't. I mean, that's just kind of should be common sense. The DMV in the US, for the most part, as I understand it, requires 20/40 vision for driving.
Right.
20/40 is already glasses that are not particularly comfortable. Like, you want to be able to recognize people, their facial expressions, your environment. So 20/40 is already not so great. What I was saying earlier, like natural daylight 2030. Yeah, it's a comfort zone thing. But I also often say just keep your old glasses or your previous strongest glasses in your car, throw them on when you're driving, be safe. Note that when you're in motion, your visual acuity, how clearly you can see, is also affected. Looking at an eye chart, you may statically see better than when things are in motion, right? And your visual cortex has to process all the things passing you by. When you don't have perfect vision, that's amplified by fast-moving objects.
Right.
So stronger glasses for driving.
So tell us about your journey when you were at a minus five. This was several years ago, I assume. And how'd you get to where you're at now?
That was, 20-ish years almost now. Started in my teens, the glasses. I was really into sports, water polo and weird stuff I like to do. Glasses were getting stronger, so the ball turned into this, it used to be a yellow ball, and then it slowly turned into just an orb. So I had to give up on sports. I turned into a bit more of a nerd. Glasses also change your perceived personality in that way, because you find other things to do. You appear to be getting more introverted and stuff. Lots of things change in your behavior when you start wearing lenses. They got stronger over time till eventually I ended up at minus 4.5, 4.75, something like that. Stabilized there. Then 20s somewhere. They were already always the same, but my vision got worse again. I went to the optometrist. They said it's genetic, needs stronger glasses. And then I started research. And this was before the handiness of all the internet stuff. So I went to libraries, found pseudomyopia, found lens-induced myopia, read the book Spates Method, and I did eye yoga and acupuncture. I was traveling a lot at the time, so I was just, wherever I was trying to figure out what else, because it's not genetic, right?
Like, right.
I'm not a geneticist, but if you have a basic idea of genetics, this thing didn't just change in the last 50 years globally, affecting just our eyes. Like, it can't be genetic. So after I figured out the eyeball length thing and the muscle spasm thing, I just made assumptions, right? Like, reduce the muscle spasm, challenge the eye to change its axial length, for which there are good studies showing that the axial length goes both ways, and it's a measurable change in as little as 30 minutes. So
wow.
Eyeball is definitely not static. So I started wearing weaker glasses, and I went to a minus three immediately. There was no end myopia at the time. Nobody knew, right? Like, there was not really any good insight. The eye yoga didn't work. The acupuncture didn't work. The eye exercises didn't work. So I went with the, science is suggesting this would be the direction. It was a terrible experience.
I can imagine going from a minus five to a minus three. That's all a big difference.
I was somewhere in Southeast Asia. and I threw away the other glasses, like a complete idiot, just to force myself. And it was terrible. It was a terrible experience. I was in an unfamiliar place. I didn't know where I was going. I was getting rides on those little motorbikes, trying to find a hotel.
The tuk-tuks, like,
it was even just mopeds. It was
oh rough. My God. Okay.
It was rough. It was a rough time. But I stuck with it because something's wrong with my brain. And eventually, it took a long time. I got to the point where with a minus three, I remember being in a subway in Hong Kong, maybe.
Huh.
Being able to read, I'm sitting on one seat and on the opposite side, the little map, being able to read the map. That was like a breakthrough moment where I was like, wow, I guess this does work. But there was a long time where it was just crap. And
wow.
Since then, because I started with nothing, right? And then things started working and friends were curious. And along the way, all the people that have done this have refined the approach. Like, I didn't figure out the approach. It's been a crowdsourced thing,
right,
where eventually we figured out big reduction is a stupid idea. Small reduction works just as well.
Right.
Lower glasses for close-up are extremely important, right?
Like,
taking breaks, figuring out when you have that muscle spasm, like all the little bits and details.
Right.
A bit of a project, but it changes your, for example, I paraglide. I'm afraid of heights. Like, I am not the dude. Not needing glasses or becoming that empowered feeling from the diopters getting lower, your your vision's improving changes your relationship with yourself. I would never thought I would do it.
I can imagine.
I kite surf. I spent 3 months out of the year in Vietnam kite surfing. If you would have told me that before, I would have said, it will never happen. But your confidence increases. You realize that your abilities are not what you thought they were, because this, you don't have peripheral vision, right?
Like, right.
You have a constant low state of anxiety because your brain's going, all of this isn't here.
Right.
Like, the thing that's coming to eat me, I don't know. So there's that. What we talked about, posture before, your interaction with people is slightly different because you're trained yourself to look through the center of your lens. So when you observe somebody's detailed personal interaction who doesn't wear glasses, it's more fluid than those of us that are or were stuck behind the lenses. So it's a super interesting journey. One, to figure out that you don't have a problem with your eyes, and two, to relearn a relationship with yourself and your environment as you get less dependent on these things.
So you have a website, you also have a blog, you also have Facebook, Twitter, I assume. I didn't look at Twitter, but...
Yeah, I don't like any of those things, to be totally honest.
But you have a website.
We have a website, nmiopia.org. And yeah, we have YouTube. We have a big Facebook group, 20,000 some odd members on there. We have a forum that's even bigger than the Facebook group. It's under the resources link on the website. That's all community stuff. I'm there sometimes. I don't like social media, so not so much, but it's a huge community. So for people that want to go on a journey but don't want to do it alone, there's a lot of people who are doing it at the same time.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And do you have any suggestions as far as nutrition or anything like that when you're doing this?
So many topics are interconnected, right? Where I immediately like to claim ignorance because I realize my limitations and I'm not a nutritionist, right? So my own personal take is address deficiencies, right? Like I personally, I'm a big nerd. I like to go get blood panels directly from the lab and I keep spreadsheets of everything because I'm a big fan of food and how food affects my health. Deficiencies will affect the eye. If, for example, if you're diabetic, you're going to have myopia also, and you're going to continue having myopia until you address that problem. If your food consumption involves a lot of insulin spikes affect your eyesight notably during the insulin spike and after. So if you're eating pizza and drinking Coke, you're going to have ups and downs in vision that you can definitely measure.
You mean that's not good for you?
Pizza and Coke. Great. It's
awesome. Just kidding.
That's all I eat. People talk about intermittent fasting. I eat pizza. So I think there are certainly specific vitamins that help with eyesight. There are, and lots of people say eye vitamins specifically. I'm more of a believer in the system, right? It's not disconnected. Right. If you have a deficiency, it may very well affect your eyesight. Blood panels are a great way to figure it out. Talking to people who know more than me about diet and nutrition, definitely. People talk about things like intermittent fasting. In our forum, that conversation comes up all the time, that intermittent fasting seems to help people's eyesight because it's easy to measure myopia.
Right.
We didn't cover that. But so definitely a connection, and definitely something that you want to address, and definitely something that I specifically don't have a lot of advice on.
Right. So you measure myopia, as you said, we didn't really talk about it, but you can measure it with the Snellen eye chart, right? And
you can also measure it with a measuring tape.
Okay.
So kind of interesting. How many diopters are you? Do you know?
I'm about a -5, -4.75, -5. Yeah.
Dude, man, I remember those times. You put the glasses somewhere, and unless you remember where you put them.
That's why I have 3 pairs.
Getting down to a -4 is going to change your relationship with that whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's not that hard. And actually, the first diopter is pretty quick. Like you may be able to do the first diopter in 90 days. Like it takes a year per diopter, but the first one, You're probably overcorrected, hopefully. You have a fair amount of muscle spasm. You don't know how to refocus. Right. Like, you can actually see better than you think. Getting to a minus four is going to make you have a great time.
Right.
Super worth it. Super, super worth it. You can measure it with a measuring tape. We also have an app. You can also measure it with your phone, but measuring tape is handy. You just take a book, print a page is best, just no backlights and stuff. You hold it however close that you see it perfectly clear, and then you move it back until there's the tiniest amount of blur. Just the tiny, you just want to see where the text no longer comes completely, you know, gray edges, whatever it is, side of the eye to the page at that distance is how far you can see clearly.
Okay.
Divide that by 100 gives you your diopters.
Oh, wow. That's pretty simple.
It's really simple. And that's all it is. You do not need to go to an optometrist to measure your myopia. That's all it is. And that number will vary based on lighting. So if you have natural ambient light, that number will be slightly bigger than if you have an artificial light. If you spent hours and hours watching Netflix, that number will be lower than if you went for a hike. If you ate well, that number will be high. If you slept well, that number will be higher. If you're taking breaks, that number will be higher. And if you make a little bit of a habit of just measuring it once in a while and you start realizing what's better for your eyes, you're already on your way, right? And you might find with these measurements, you take 10 and your average might not be minus 5. Maybe it's minus 4.5.
Right.
And then you might feel adventurous and you hop online, you go on Zenni.com, you spend $20 on a pair of minus 4.5s. You start your day off without glasses, 20 minutes or so, traipse around, and then you pop on those minus 4.5s and realize that maybe you see just fine with those.
Right. Like
that's the, it's kind of a, I don't love the word biohacking, but it is kind of a little self adventure of how many of these things do I need?
Right.
And then you stop wearing what you're wearing now for close-up use and go like a diopter and a quarter, a diopter and a half lower to where things past the screen are blurry. If you do that for a month and by accident you leave your full power glasses on and get in front of the computer, you will know. Like you will get a headache. You're going to feel quite uncomfortable because the only way your eyes can tolerate this now is you're just used to it. But if you remove that habituated strain, you're not going to be happy to reintroduce it later. So lots of little things like that, but you're going to have a much better relationship with all this.
Oh, that's cool.
Stuff.
I think we should do an experiment on me and then see what happens.
You should. And I'm kind of a little boring because I've had this conversation with people a million times.
I'm sure you have.
So I'm just kind of, but genuinely speaking, like I'm always amazed how people are not more excited about this idea up front. Like once you do it, you're like, huh. You're so used to it. It's like you accepted a handicap. There's something in our brain that just goes, this is what it is.
Right.
It doesn't cause me physical pain. I have other problems. Let's not worry about it. But even you go to a minus 4.5 and you walk around and you see 90% as well, it flips a switch where you just go, well, that's nonsense then. And you stop being so accepting of this thing. And the other thing is, as you get older, as we get older, eventually, presbyopia, you're going to start having a hard time seeing things up close.
Right.
And then you're getting multifocal glasses and then you can't see anything anywhere. And it's just, I watch people go through that and they age faster. And I'm not saying like physically age faster, but when you stop being able to see, now you can't see at a distance, then you can't see up close.
Right.
And then you're wearing glasses that are multifocal. So when you look down, you have no distance vision. Right. When you look up, you have no close-up vision. So now you're stuck in this increasingly small box, totally unnecessary. If you get rid of your minus five, you're not going to get presbyopia either. So you're just going to have good vision all around. Different experience, right?
Right.
Getting older, being in this thing versus just having a good vision. So experiment, yes.
Yes, that sounds great. I'll probably start working on that myself. I think I find that to be something that if we can do that, that would help so many people in this world. I mean, it's not an illness that necessarily is there. It's just, you know, I think about people going through LASIK or going through other things to try to make their vision better. And you could avoid that by just working on yourself.
Yeah. And speaking of LASIK, if you Google Dr. Morris Waxler, the man at the FDA who got LASIK approved in the first place, like if you already had LASIK and you didn't have side effects, you're fine. Great. But to get LASIK is definitely taking a chance.
Like right.
It's a risky thing.
Well,
and
Jake,
I apologize for all the giant monologues. I just kind of got into it.
No, I love it. My podcast is a lot of me talking, so it's usually one big monologue for me. So this is great that I have someone else talking instead of me.
Try it, and you have my email. We could just keep in touch. And,
absolutely.
And the initial learning curve can be a tiny bit daunting, but what we talked about is all it is. The website is huge because it's been around. I've written like 1,200 articles because every time there's a question, every time there's a study, every time there's a thing, I've written about it. And it's basically, if you imagine a drawers full of notes, that's the website, right? Like, so I have a 7-day little email guide that breaks it down. And then there's a few weeks where you're going to be like, that's a lot of stuff. But it's really just close-up strain, lower glasses for close-up, adopter and a quarter lower. And first, you only do that. Don't mess with your distance vision at all. Just figure this whole process out only with your computer distance.
Right.
Leave the distance glasses as they are right now so that you always have a familiar focal plane. Right. Like when you go outside, when you drive, when you're doing things, it's not part of the experiment. The first experiment is just you and the computer distance.
Right.
So you have a static environment, you have a simple, predictable routine, you're sitting down, you're getting lower power glasses, and now you have time to establish a comfort level with that.
Right.
You take a month, your eyes adjust to this, your brain adjusts to challenge, because these glasses, when you move back a little bit, your screen will get blurry. You can blink, the screen clears up a little bit, you start reestablishing this, my eyesight isn't meant to be perfect.
Right.
And after a month or so of that, then you get into slight reduction of the distance vision, because then you already have this familiarity. You know what you're doing. You feel comfortable. You make a tiny reduction there, and then you're on your way, basically.
That's fantastic.
Great. Yes.
Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I hope you get... Actually, I don't hope you get out of Bangkok. That's fantastic that you're in Bangkok. Of all the places you get stuck in during COVID, I mean...
Actually, I was living on an island in the south, not living, but I have a house on the island in the south where I spent a little bit of time, and like a fool, I came to Bangkok, and then the next wave hit. So now I'm stuck.
Oh no. Okay. Well,
but it's still, it's a nice place. There's Thai food everywhere. It's great.
Yeah. That's what we're having for dinner. So I'm excited about it.
Awesome.
Cool. Nice to meet you, Jake. Thank you so much
for
chatting. Being on the podcast.
Email me. Let me know if you have questions.
I will, and I'll give everybody updates on my progress, and I will also give you updates on my progress.
All right. Thanks, Avi. Enjoy your Thai food.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Jake. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to the Painless Health Podcast. I hope the information that has been given to you has been useful. Of course, I am a physician, but not yours. So please go see your physician for medical advice and further information about any of the topics you've heard today. Thank you again, and have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.